disabilities. It's about social justice, community supports, inclusion, accessibility, freedom, and choice. My name is Vicki Nicewander, and I'm the host of this program and also the parent of a fantastic young woman with a disability.
The views and opinions expressed here are those of the speakers and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, its board of directors, associate station manager, or Prairie Air Incorporated.
Stay tuned for an interview with Amy Lulinski, Executive Director of the Arc of Illinois, the biggest advocacy organization for people with disabilities in Illinois. But first, disability news for the week of October 30th, 2023. According to a new study by researchers at Boston University, the number of American adults diagnosed with autism has more than doubled between 2001 and 2011. The study was published this month in the JAMA Psychiatry. The largest increase studied was in adults age 25 to 34 who had a 195% jump in prevalence. The increase among people from ages 55 to 64 was 45%. Autism was found to be two times as common among white Medicaid beneficiaries compared to people from other racial groups. About 75% of those found to be on the spectrum were male. The study also found that the percentage of Medicaid enrollees with autism and intellectual disability declined over the course of the period studied from a high of 62% to 46%. The increased diagnoses for adults follows an increase in autism prevalence in children in recent years. In 2000, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimated that one in 150 American children had autism, and in 2020, they estimated the rate as one in 36. Limited research exists on adults diagnosed with autism, but a CDC report issued in 2020 said that autism affected more than 5.4 million people over age 18, or about 1 in 45. Zoe Gross is the director of advocacy at the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. Gross said the increase in autism diagnoses among adults makes sense, remarking that prevalence in children was increasing when Medicaid enrollees in the 25 to 34 age group were young. Gross said, quote, "It's possible that diagnoses of autistic adults have increased as well, but I don't believe there is data to support this. Regardless, as there is more access to diagnosis, we can expect the amount of Medicaid beneficiaries with an autism diagnosis to continue increasing for some time," end quote. Stuart Spielman, Senior Vice President of Advocacy at Autism Speaks, said that as a result of this discovery that Medicaid will need to step up to meet the needs of this group. A clinical trial by researchers at the Seattle Children's Hospital have developed a test that can check for genetic conditions. To date, genetic tests have been focused on a few variants that cause diseases, but results can take months to complete. The study at Seattle Children's Hospital can sequence a child's entire genome, looking for a range of possible abnormalities, potentially in less than a week. As a result, some babies with rare medical conditions are able to almost immediately benefit from life-saving treatment. Unfortunately, few babies receive testing because many private and public health insurers won't cover the expense, which ranges between $4,000 to $8,000. Recently, however, genetic testing companies, pharmaceutical companies, children's hospitals, and doctors have advocated for states to increase coverage for the genetic testing under Medicaid with some positive results. Since 2021, 8 state-run Medicaid programs have added rapid whole genome sequencing to their coverage, or soon will cover it, according to GeneDx, a provider of the test. States that have approved expansion include Florida, Georgia, Massachusetts, New York, and North Carolina, according to Rady's Children's Institute for Genomic Medicine, another major provider of the test. Medical coverage would significantly expand access for infants for low-income families, which covers more than 40% of children in their first year of life. Jill Marin is the chief of pediatrics at Women and Infants Hospital in Providence, Rhode Island, who has conducted research on the test. According to Marin, quote, "This is an extraordinary, powerful test that can change the trajectory of these children's diseases and our own understanding. The only thing interfering with more widespread use is insurance payment," end quote. Proponents of whole genome sequencing, which has been available for about 6 years, say that it could help sick infants with potentially rare diseases avoid a drawn-out series of tests and hospitalizations without a definite diagnosis and greatly increase the likelihood of survival. There are also studies that show the testing may lower overall health costs by reducing hospitalizations, testing, and care. But the test still has limits, detecting a mutation about 50% of the time because the test misses something or the patient may not have a genetic disorder at all. It also raises ethical questions because it can also reveal that babies and their parents have genes that put them at an increased risk for adult onset conditions such as breast and ovarian cancer. Some private insurers now cover the test with certain limitations, including UnitedHealthcare and Cigna, but others do not. And even when the test has been approved for coverage, that coverage varies. And finally, the San Francisco Museum of Modern Art has announced the acquisition of more than 150 works by 23 artists with developmental disabilities in the Bay Area, the largest acquisition of its type in the history of the museum. The acquisition represents organizations such as Oakland's Creative Growth, San Francisco's Creativity Explored, and Richmond's NIAD Art Center. And those are all dedicated to working with artists with developmental disabilities. The artworks include paper, painting, sculpture, film, and textile. According to Katie Siegel, the museum's research director of special program initiatives, quote, "We hope that this is a landmark acquisition that encourages and sets a benchmark for other institutions. We're mindful that we're catching up and have an enormous amount of work to do," end quote. Siegel said that she hopes the acquisition and partnership push museums to think about expanding their collections to include more artists with disabilities. She said, quote, "I think any time a museum of the scale and reputation that we have commits a gesture of this size, it changes things. Other museums feel a sense of permission or at least a sense of curiosity about what that might look like in their own institutions," end quote. And that's the news for this week.
Promise that you'd be right there with me. But I paid my master fee.
You are listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. I'm excited to announce that we have Amy Lulinski, who is the executive director of the Arc of Illinois, one of the biggest and most powerful advocacy organizations in the state of Illinois, and I'm thinking probably across the country as well. Welcome to the program, Amy. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much, Vicki.
So let's start by introducing you. What is a little bit about your background for the listeners who have not met you yet, and how did you end up as the director of the Arc of Illinois?
Sure, happy to share that, and thank you so much again for having me. So, like you said, my name is Amy. I have been fortunate enough to be in service in the field of intellectual and developmental disabilities since technically 1995, but there was some volunteer work.
Okay, you were a child in 1995.
I wish that were the case. But I have been engaged in this work for quite a long time. And how did I end up here? Whew, that might be a question for another episode. But briefly, I started out my career as a direct support professional, and I worked in a variety of community-based organizations in both Missouri and Illinois. And then I moved to Illinois and had the chance to work in a couple of other community-based organizations. And then I found out about graduate studies at the University of Illinois at Chicago, and I went to pursue my master's and liked it so much, I decided to, why not? Let's get a PhD in disability studies, and I focused on policy. I finished graduating. I had the opportunity to go to the ARC-US and do public policy at the federal level. And just so happens, around the time that my husband and I were relocating back to Illinois from the D.C. area, that this job was available. And so I applied, and here I am. That's what brings me here today.
Well, see, that wasn't too bad. That was a very quick and easy explanation.
Thank you. And
glad the timing worked out for you. You've been a great asset to the ARC of Illinois. So for people who don't know about the ARC, can you explain some of the pieces of what kind of work the ARC does in the state?
Absolutely. So like you said, the ARC of Illinois is an advocacy organization. We are statewide and we are nonprofit, and we represent roughly 300,000 people with intellectual and developmental disabilities that are estimated to live in Illinois, along with their families and those people who support them. We have a number of programs that we offer here, not necessarily direct support. We don't provide residential services or employment out of this state chapter office, but we do have a number of programs that are there to help families to navigate the system. One of those is Illinois Lifespan Program. It's been around for a while, and it is a generalist. You can call with any type of disability-related question, and you will be talking to a live person on the phone, and get some resources and hopefully some help and direction and where you can go to seek services or whatever supports it is that you are looking for. We also have the Ligas Family Advocate Program, which is for individuals who are Ligas class members and are seeking home-based or SILA services. We have the Family Support Network, which is in place to assist families in navigating the system, particularly if they're having difficulty in an area. They can come, they can call, and they can talk to, again, a live person and have some assistance and support in getting their needs met or getting the information that they're looking for. We have the Family-to-Family Health Information Center, which, like it sounds, provides health information to families of children with any type of disability.
Amy, you're cutting out a little bit. I'm not sure what's going on, but you might
want to... Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I'm not even moving around. Okay. So we have that. We have the Family Transition Project, which is working with folks who live in one of Illinois' 7 state-operated developmental centers to help their family and them to find out information and explore opportunities to live in the community. And we have some really wonderful peer mentors in that program who lived in a state-operated developmental center themselves and are able to share with others who are considering that change about their experience. And so it's a really great program. We also have the Going Home Coalition, which is funded by the Coleman Foundation, and that is seeking to assist people in moving out of state-operated developmental centers and advocating for that work to be done. We have an assistive technology program, which is funded totally by donations, and it enables people who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford a piece of technology to obtain it. So, for example, if a person wanted a tablet to be able to better communicate while they were in their community, but for whatever reason, Medicaid or Medicare could not or would not pay for it, with a letter from a qualified professional, this person possibly could be eligible for a tablet and would be purchased and sent directly to them. And we've gotten some great feedback about ways in which that has helped people to access their communities better.
You've been doing that for a number of years now. Any idea how many pieces of equipment have been distributed by the ARC? It's got to be hundreds.
That's a good question, and I need to find the answer. I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah, I'm sure
it's
a lot.
But yes, we have been doing it for a while. Yeah, yeah. So I'm sure there's many people that it has impacted. And then also we have a consumer stipend program that's funded by the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities, and that enables us to provide funding to individuals with...
You're cutting out again, Amy.
I'm so sorry. I promise I'm not even moving. I'll keep going.
Okay.
Sorry about that. Allows funding for families and individuals with intellectual disabilities to be able to participate and attend trainings or conferences as long as they're related to developmental disability. They do not have to be through the ARC of Illinois. They can be through another organization. And it's great. It can pay for the registration. It can pay for travel. It can pay for lodging or respite or whatever it is that that family would need in order to participate in that training.
Are the conferences limited strictly to Illinois, or can people go anywhere?
Excellent question. They are not limited to Illinois.
And do they have to prove any kind of financial need?
Yes, there is an application that they would need to fill out, and it basically would need to show that they are not able to get the device funded elsewhere.
Oh, I thought we were talking about the conferences.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about assistive technology.
Nope. I was talking about going to a conference. Do they have to pay? Do they have to prove they have financial need to get the funding to go to a conference somewhere? No. Okay.
No. Nope. Like I said, it's available through the generosity of the Illinois Council on Developmental Disabilities, and it is not needs-based.
Great. Well, that's a lot. That's a lot. And that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg, is it not?
Correct. You're right. We also have, we do a lot of public policy advocacy. As a matter of fact, that's something I'm excited to talk about that we're engaged in right now. Every year,
You're cutting out one more time. Sorry to keep bugging about that, but
I want
people to understand what you're saying here.
I appreciate it, and I'm sorry. I promise I'm being very still.
That's okay. Phones can be tricky.
So we typically in the past we have surveyed only membership, but this year we've widened it out to be anybody that is, either somebody with an intellectual disability, a family member, a professional working in the field. And that survey is open until tomorrow. So there is still time if folks have not yet had an opportunity to fill out our public policy survey, which will inform our public policy priorities for next year. Please go to our website. If you go to our Take Action tab and go to Advocate, you will see a link. You can take the survey in either English or Spanish. And again, it closes tomorrow, and we're really hopeful we get lots and lots of responses.
So what are some of the questions that are asked on this survey?
Oh, good question. So there's a variety of topics in which we're asking people about. So we're asking them about employment. It's very different than it's been in the past. It's a much more specific. So we've got categories, and then underneath them, so for example, we have employment, and then we have a number of things listed under employment for folks to pick their top 2 to 3 priorities that they have that are most important to them.
Mm-hmm.
Out of those choices. And then at the end, we provide an opportunity for people to rank those general categories. So they can say whether community services is most important to them, or if it is something else, if it's employment, if it's healthcare access, et cetera. So we're drilling down a little bit, trying to get additional information about what the needs are in the community, and then asking folks to rank how important it is to them.
And that is for, you said, for people with disabilities, for families, and for providers?
And for professionals in the field, yes.
Professionals in the field. Okay, well, that's interesting. So how soon will those, are those results going to be collated and then released? Or are you going to use them for another purpose? How will that information benefit the ARC and ultimately people with disabilities in the state?
Sure. So the survey
You're cutting.
Along with the survey, we're also doing a number of individual and family forums across the state to meet in person with family members, individuals with intellectual disabilities, professionals, to give me the opportunity to directly hear from them. What are barriers? Are there challenges? What do they wish was in existence that isn't? And so it really is a two-pronged approach with the survey, getting the quantitative information, and then the meetings, getting the qualitative information. We'll be taking all of that back to our public policy committee, and then from there we'll be determining what our legislative priorities will be for next year, depending on the results of the survey, and then also taking into account the individual and family forums as well.
And do you have a goal for how many people you hope will take part in this survey, or are you just hoping for the most you can get?
Well, I tend to be a little too hopeful. I figure this way. There's about 300,000 people in the state of Illinois who have an intellectual disability.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could get 10% of that, that'd be a wonderful. But I'd be really thrilled with 1,000.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I certainly will point people in that direction. So the link is on your website, which is?
Yes, it is. www.thearcofil.org.
Okay. Now, not to, ignore some of the other important work that you're doing, I know that you have a close relationship with the Division of Developmental Disabilities and other agencies at the state level. What is some of the work that you're doing at that level? What are you involved in at this point?
Excellent question. So the first answer to the question is we do, and I failed to mention that the Illinois Lifespan Project is funded by the Division of Developmental Disabilities, as is the Liggett Family Advocacy Program.
Mm-hmm.
As well as Family Support Network and Family Transition Project. So we work closely with them in that they provide us funds to be able to deliver the services and supports to folks. The other ways that we're more involved is by being engaged in different committees, whether it's a committee to review rules and regulations. There is a DD transformation group that is meeting to get updates regularly from the director about how things are going in terms of the reinvigoration, the transformation, rather, of SHOT. So we're engaged in that way. Many different ways. I probably have contact with the division at least once a week, if not more sometimes, just depending on what it is. But I see my role with the division is to deliver to them the information that we're hearing from the field. All of these programs that I mentioned, every single one of them has a staff that directs it, and that team member will relay to me certain issues that are going on or trends they're seeing so that we can relay that to the division and let them know where some areas of concern are.
Yeah, I think that because you're delivering the message that you're hearing from people, that offers a little bit of separation from the fact that, so much of your funding comes from the state of Illinois. So, I think there are people out there who would say, well, how can they be advocates really? Because the money comes from the people they're advocating against.
And I get that. And it can be tricky if you let it be.
Mm-hmm.
We have deliverables for those projects. Those projects are helping lots of families around the state of Illinois. And I think we can walk and chew gum at the same time, particularly now, right? Like, I think that there is definitely more openness to talking about. We've heard it from both the current director as well as the previous director, that they are looking to decrease the institutional footprint in Illinois in terms of the number of people living in congregate settings. And that's something that we 100% can get on board with. And so there are definitely areas of overlap that we work together, we work together on. One of the things that we have been discussing is how the Family Transition Project might be further able to help with some of the SHOAT transformation efforts in terms of peer mentors, family mentors, being able to assist folks who are giving consideration to where they might go, where they might go after SHOAT.
Yeah, what's happening in the system right now, it's going to take a multi-pronged effort. They're not going to have to just walk and chew gum. They're going to have to do pirouettes and cartwheels to make all this work.
I agree. It's tough. And that's why, Vicki, I'm so glad to be on with you today, because that is just one area where we're really looking to expand is the number of families that we touch and interact with. A lot of folks don't know that the Arc of Illinois fairly small, even though we have locations throughout the state. We are fairly small. We have 20 staff altogether. And, we do the best we can with what we've got, and hoping that folks will find value in what we provide and decide that they would like to support the Arc of Illinois, either by becoming an individual member, a family member, a professional member, et cetera. And so that's a big way in which we get some of our, what we call unrestricted funds, that allows us to do the advocacy work.
Yeah,
that is through our chapters and our organizational affiliates, of which we have quite a few. We've grown quite a bit over the past couple of years. We've brought Avenues to Independence back on board. Don Moss is now a member. Encompass, Grupo Salto, supporting Illinois Brothers and Sisters. Ed McManus is on. And so we have done quite a bit of work in trying to spread the word about what we're doing and letting folks know what we can offer in terms of individualized supports as well as some legislative advocacy.
So if people are interested in about learning more about the Arc of Illinois, I'm assuming you'd suggest they go to the website today and do the survey, maybe
yes,
become a member, research what's going on, and plan on spending a little bit of time going over the website, because there's a ton of information there.
We do a lot. We are small but mighty. The folks, the majority of folks that we have on staff here at the ARC are family members. A lot of parents of children and adult children with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And so they come at their work from a place of lived experience, and they do what they do because they struggled and they don't want other families to struggle.
Yeah. Well, kudos to all of them. They're a great group of people. And the website,
sure,
one more time?
Sure. www.thearcofil.org. At the top, you can see there's a button that says join us. There's a button that says donate. You can go to the take action and hit on the advocate page, and that will take you to the public policy survey, as well as a list of the individual and family forums that are occurring throughout the state.
Very
also
good.
I have to mention, we do a bunch of training as well. We have training events happening all year round. We have one coming up in mid-November that is devoted exclusively to intellectual disability and mental health concerns, and that is the November 14th and 15th. And then we have a QIDP conference in January, the 23rd of January. And then, of course, the most thing I'm most excited about, Vicki, and this might be a first that is public, we're moving the location of our annual convention.
To where?
Bloomington.
Bloomington. So only an hour away from Champaign-Urbana. That's good news for the people who live here who have never been
yes,
to the
indeed.
ARC convention. So, yeah.
We are trying, we're trying to make ourselves more accessible. And so we're trying to move around a little bit. And so we're really hopeful that folks will join us in Bloomington in early May.
Thanks so much for joining me today. Amy Lulinski, Executive Director of the Arc of Illinois.
Thank you, Vicki.
This and other episodes of Disability Beat are available at weft.org/public affairs. For updates and information, join our Facebook page at Disability Beat Radio. To share ideas for guests or topics, email Vicki at disabilitybeat@gmail.com. Thanks for tuning in and have a great rest of your week. No, I'll stay.